So welcome, everyone. It's Elaine with Impact ADHD, and this is the Thursday evening Coaches Club call for the Parent Success System. And it is the first week of January, so we're all getting our sea legs back for 2014. And there are about five of us on the call tonight, so we should have some wonderful conversation. And I want to start by asking everybody to think about the last call we had. We talked about asking for help, and particularly like the opportunity that was available for all of us with the holidays and people home, and what was there for us in terms of asking for help. So just to check in terms of how did you do on your commitments and how did it go over the holidays? Who wants to share something?
I'm new, so I won't be first.
Okay.
I didn't know to look for it, but I was home with my kids.
Say that again?
I said I didn't know to even have to look out for it or to ask for the help. But
right.
I was home with my kids, so.
Yep. So, and one of the things you may want to make sure that you do is to, you got the parent's manual, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so make sure that you sort of just go back and read and catch up to where we are.
Okay.
And this week we're on, I think we're on chapter 9, which is triggers, mm-hmm. Identifying triggers.
Okay.
So who else? How did it go over the holidays for anybody? And if there's anything else you want to share, celebrations you want to have or challenges that you're facing?
This is Rhonda, and I was not on the last call because we were traveling for 2 weeks over the holidays. So I didn't participate in that at all, but I can tell you how it went over the holidays. We spent a week in Montana. You know, it was tough. We spent a week in Montana and skiing and spending time with my parents, and we spent a week in California hiking Yosemite and things like that. And it was tough. It was really tough. It was tough to be with the kids because I think, and maybe this is all, you know, all kids of that age. My boys are 11 and 13, and they really didn't want to, they really wanted to be at home. And they were having a hard time with the constant adventure. So what I found myself being stressed, because I had to spend a whole lot of time being the cheerleader. And it was really hard, you know, constant, gosh, this is so much fun. Can't you wait? It's going to be great. And even when I didn't feel that because I was exhausted.
Right.
So it was exhausting, and it was hard to be the cheerleader and the manager and the coordinator. And I think that all vacations are that way, but I think with my boys in particular, both of whom have ADHD, one, my eldest one is hyperactive. And is very negative. And my younger one is actually, I just got the test results the other day that he is pretty high functioning autism. So he has ADHD as well as essentially what they used to call Asperger's.
Right.
So that was tough. It was really tough. Tough enough that I'm kind of swearing off vacations forever, or until the next one. It was rough.
It sounds like it was. And so what I would offer to you, rather than swearing off vacations, because is two things. One is the difference between a vacation and a family trip, which is a distinction I like to make, because we say we're going on vacation, but if we've got our whole family with us and we're in charge and cheerleading the whole time, it's really a family trip, because you didn't really get a vacation.
That's right.
And so just sort of changing the language and shifting the mindset can set you up for less frustration in the process. But the other is to really, as you think about the next time you want to go away, is to really engage the family in the process of trying to help, let them help identify something that they want to do and see if you can begin to design vacations in a way that will engage them and really be a way to bond the family instead of you feeling like you're pulling them along.
Yeah, and you know, we have always done that, and what we're met with usually is blank stares.
Mm-hmm.
So we said, oh, we're going to go skiing. We're going to have so much fun. We're going to be in Montana. We're going to see Grandma and Nana and Grandpa. It's going to be really fun. And they just said, I don't want to go skiing. I don't want to go to Montana. I don't want to do Christmas there. But I want to go to Christmas, but I don't want to stay home. But I don't want to do that. Can we just go for one day and then come back and play on our electronics for the rest of, you know, the remaining, you know, 13 days? I just want to go open presents and come home.
Yeah.
So we did have that conversation. Like, oh, gosh, think of all the great things we can do. Here's another cheerleading process, right?
Right.
Think of all the great things we can do. It's going to be so much fun, and we're going to go skiing, and we can go snowboarding. It'll be so, I don't want to do that.
Right.
I don't want to go snowboarding. Can I just stay home? Why can't I just stay home?
So, So it didn't work. And what I'm going to say, what I still want to offer to you is not to give it up, but that maybe there's another way.
Yeah.
Rather than saying, well, that didn't work, and it may be that you need to just lick your wounds for a little bit longer.
Yeah, it may be a little too close still, right?
Exactly. But, you know, when you're ready to think about it, let's talk about how do you engage them in a way that's meaningful for them.
Yeah.
And their initial response is likely to be blank stares, and that's okay. You can guide them through that. We can help you with that. So, sorry it was hard, but I hope you enjoyed being in Montana and California.
Oh, parts of it were wonderful. I mean, just
good.
Parts of it. I think that the first, it was 17 days, which is it's very long.
Very long.
And I would say the first 10 days were just golden. And then
Great.
They diminished little by little.
Okay.
So I said to myself, I think maybe 10 days for an hour.
I was going to say, maybe that's just too long, too, yeah. So
yeah, I think it probably is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a good lesson learned, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
So who else? Anybody else want to share or catch us up on how it went? Lana or Tracy?
It's Tracy.
Uneventful.
Oh.
No,
Lana,
go ahead.
Was uneventful?
Yeah, it was just uneventful. It was really nothing to, you know, in any way to really share.
Okay. Did you experiment with asking for help?
I did, you know, mostly from my father came to stay with us, so I asked him for help. My sister, when she was here, you know, my husband, and Gabe had his, you know, my son had his chores to do, you know. So in that sense, yeah.
Okay.
And it was easier, because he wasn't in school, so there wasn't the homework. The homework nugget wasn't there, you know, taking over time. So it was easier to get cooperation.
Yeah, totally understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Tracy, what about you? Tracy, weren't you just trying to say something a minute ago?
Yes. Sorry, I was on mute just talking.
That's
you couldn't hear me. I missed the last two calls because I was on vacation, but the asking for help thing, I like that concept, and I didn't hear the call. But I found that loosey-goosey is really fun for, you know, 3, 4, 5 days, and then everything tanks. You know, so structure, I need to keep more structure along the whole way, even though I can be a little more loosey-goosey. Not as loosey-goosey as what can be really fun, which is my kind of personality to be super loosey-goosey about it. But I've learned that I really need to keep some structure, too, because everything just hangs and it goes wrong quickly. So, but it was, you know, we had a great holiday season, but it tanked at the end.
Yeah, so, and that seems to be a theme, that it tanked at the end. You know, and maybe it helps us
We're
appreciate.
We're also thrilled. Yay, maybe life will be easy. No, that's not it.
Well, and I think, you know, a lot of people got hit by this round of weather, too, where just when we were ready for the kids to go back to school, they were home again.
Yeah.
And that happened all over the country.
Can I share something from our break?
Yeah.
And I did speak to you about it, Elaine, but I'm curious maybe if other people have felt the same way in similar situations. So my husband, who has ADHD and attentive type, So he was away for about a week or eight days, and everything was like really calm and smooth in the house when he was away. I did have some help. It wasn't like it was just me, so I can't take all the credit. But it was just, you know, several days in a row of like not dealing with that behavior of just a little bit of the, I guess, impulsiveness or chaoticness. And I, as much as I missed him, I was excited for him to come back. I was just, the day he was coming back, I felt like I had an anxiety attack about like, oh no, it's going to start up again. Whereas like all the bedtimes were going smooth. And even though I was pretty much on my own, like I was able to like wing it because I knew I was on my own and I just, you know, harnessed my powers. But I felt like I was like, oh my goodness. Like, and I don't even know why. Like it ended up actually being much better than I had anticipated. But I was like really, really afraid. And it was scary. But Elaine, you had said, you know, think about like what your priorities are and, you know, put the first things first, you know, whether you wanted to first reconnect or catch up or, you know, take
right.
care of the kids. And it worked out well. But I was just curious, like, I don't want to have that perspective where like, oh, you know, like my husband's away. And so now I felt like it was easier.
Does anybody else in the group, in this group have a spouse who's got ADHD as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is Tracy, yeah.
So does Shira's experience sound familiar to anybody else when they go away, that there's a part of it that's easier?
I have a lot of friends whose husbands travel who don't have ADHD, and they say it's easier when I was married. No, really, it's true. But when I was married, and it was a lot easier when he wasn't. It just, there was less volume in the house, less chaoticness. You know, it was just smoother because it was one less highly active body, you know, highly verbal, highly active body in the house, you know. I think that's normal.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a great way of putting it.
I didn't feel good the way I was feeling. I didn't feel like that was a healthy, appropriate feeling. Like I should have just been happy and excited. That's what, like, my brain was telling me, but my heart was saying, like, oh no. But apparently, I mean, I guess it makes sense, you know, but I was more nervous than I should have been because it ended up being okay, which I felt like, I guess I refocused by the time he came home, but it was just like the whole day, and I was fine the whole time until that day, and it was like, and then he actually asked me if it was easier when he was away, or were you on vacation from my ADHD, like, stuff? And I was like, there's no way I can answer that question and not, like, say the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of just got it. I didn't want to, like, we were on perfect terms. I didn't want to, like, say the wrong thing. I didn't want to perfect, like, straight out lie because he knows it does affect our life. So I didn't want to make it sound like it was nothing. But, he was just like, no, I just want to know because I want to know how much it affects, like how much it impacts, you know, our day life. And I'm like,
mm-hmm.
like, you know it does. That's why we try to do something about it. So, but I felt on the spot. I didn't tell him I was having anxiety about it the day he was coming home. I didn't think that would be a good recipe.
Yeah, well, and there's an opportunity in the future to revisit that conversation when you're not in that moment. And to share it incrementally, you know, little bits at a time.
What would he gain from knowing that, like, life was easier without him? Like, how would that benefit?
Well, I'm open to anybody else. I guess the question is, what's important for you about him understanding how to shift and modify so that he is more of a help than a hindrance.
Mm-hmm.
It was when I was going through that, it was really helpful when I had ADHD just to say to him, you know, starting at 7, can we kind of wind down in the house? You know, because he'd still be kind of high energy all the way right till bed. So little things like just asking for help, do you think you could be starting to wind down at 7 like I do when I'm putting the baby down, blah, blah, blah. So just asking for little things that could help, not necessarily criticizing, but just asking for help.
Mm-hmm. And I have done that, and I even feel like since he came back, he's even more trying, like, you know, in a sense, the absence made the heart grow fonder, where, like, he came back ready to roll up his sleeves, which is really nice.
That's great.
Yeah, I didn't know how he was going to come back. Maybe he had a vacation from all the household responsibilities, you know. So I felt like, you know, but so in that sense, it's good. I feel like he came back kind of rejuvenated, which was one of the purposes of his trip.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, so let's transfer into, I want to move into the conversation, and this is sort of a good segue. But I need to step back for just a second, and then we'll come back to it, to let everybody identify what's the area of focus that you want to have and work on for the next couple of weeks. What do you want to take aim on in your family dynamic, whether it's something around your kids or something around yourself and how you're responding or managing? And a big theme that came up today was really most of the parents in the call this afternoon were talking about how they respond to being triggered. And so that was a big topic of conversation. But what do you want to focus on in the next couple of weeks? And everybody, you know, take a minute, write it down for yourself. We're on page 22 of the workbook if you've got that printed out. And then share with us what's your focus, what's your attention on tonight.
This is Rhonda. I also like that, the same thing. I really like the whole idea of, you know, how we respond to our chains being yanked, essentially. It makes all the difference. And just
right.
How the dynamics of a family and our own, or just our own calmness or, I think that the whole purpose of coaching is to understand why you have triggers, you know, where they come from, and how to manage them so that they are useful. Instead of like having a temper tantrum, right? I think,
right.
Isn't that kind of the whole idea behind coaching in general, is, you know, what things really bother you, and how do you react to them so that they are constructive?
I wouldn't say maybe that's the purpose of coaching, but I would say that's a major place that coaching takes place. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Is that we spend a lot of time there because we're humans and we get triggered a lot, right?
Right.
So what you really want to focus on is how you respond when your chain gets yanked.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
That sounds good to me. It's Shira.
Shira, same issue.
It sounds good, yes.
Okay. Anybody else?
Same thing, Tracy.
Okay, and Lana?
Yeah, I have to say the same thing. It's funny, I think what's been going on for me is my goal lately has been thinking about how I talk to him, whether I'm getting triggered or not, and finding, I guess I am trying to circumvent the triggers. That's kind of where I've been, because I've been trying to have a more thoughtful response, more compassionate, a little bit more in the moment, and not like just shooting from the hip. But I've also noticed that I have been getting triggered by the way my husband is parenting my son. There's a couple issues in particular, not everything, but there are a couple that have been ongoing for a long period of time, and I'm getting triggered with that. And so, and the problem is then I feel like I get stuck because I don't know how to be a co-parent in that moment. Because I just want to solve the problem right there. And so that, I can see I'm being really impulsive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's a great lead-in. Let's talk a little bit about what we mean by being triggered. And then we'll come back and let everybody sort of look at how is it showing up in your world, and what do we want to do about it. because we're sort of, I think, you know, the thing about this concept of managing triggers is that we all know what we mean when we say triggered, for the most part, right? We all have this experience. We know when we're triggered. We know when we're triggering others. We know that our kids and our spouses know how to push our buttons, and we know that that sometimes we know how to push theirs. And we've all had that experience of saying something and knowing that you shouldn't be saying it and saying it anyway, knowing that somebody's on the edge and pushing them over, right? So there's something about the human condition that sort of that's a part of our dynamic. So, you know, button is a trigger, and when something gets you angry or upset, either you are being triggered by or you're triggering, but it's sort of that knee-jerk reaction that happens, right? And each of us has different things that trigger us. One of the things I realized as I was talking about it earlier today is that one of the interesting things about triggers is that particularly for those of us who are in long-term relationships with a spouse, but even as our kids get older, is that, you know, what starts off being sweet over time becomes a trigger and makes you crazy. And then, you know, if you stay together long enough or as the kids get older, it becomes endearing again, that somehow it's not a trigger anymore. So they are not as absolute or finite. They are in some ways triggers because they're sort of like irritants, right? And so what might bug you one week may not bug you the next, or one year maybe may not bug you the next. And then sometimes they're triggers that they become so deep ingrained that they just drive you absolutely bonkers, right? So the reason we bring this up here at this time in this curriculum is because once you've identified your triggers, you can begin to manage how you respond instead of that reaction. And it that process of getting to response is what we really want to work on here. But before I, and I'm going to give you a strategy that we teach a lot around this, but before I do, I want to just have a little conversation around triggers and what's sort of coming up for all of you around the topic, and not as much what are your specific triggers, but what do you notice about your behaviors around triggers? So what's coming up for anybody?
This is Lana. I know for me, I get angry quickly, and I want to deal with the situation very quickly. Like, I just want to kind of resolve it, get it done, get it taken care of. Like, there's not, if I just flow with the trigger and flow in a triggered mode, I'm angry, I want to handle it now, I'm not asking questions, and I'm not waiting to hear any answers from the other person. I'm just, rah, 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 you know, and then ultimately, I think that I might not be making the best decisions, or I may not be resolving the situation in a way that's productive.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, if you're not asking questions and you're rah, 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 then you're not listening, right?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not interested in listening.
When you get triggered, what do you notice about what happens in your body or your awareness? How do you know when you're triggered?
My body, actually my neck goes forward, and I, you know, I'm kind of like forward leaning, and I'm tense and I'm rigid.
Mm-hmm. So forward leaning, it's almost like you're leaning into the attack.
Yeah, and I also feel like I'm channeling my mother. Not kidding. That feeling like, oh no, not again.
Okay, so forward leaning, neck forward, you hear your mother coming out of your voice. if we do work privately, and I don't know if any of you have ever done any work with gremlins, but one of the things we do when we do gremlin management is as you identify your gremlin, a lot of times when I hear people say like what you just said, Lana, it's like inevitably your gremlin is your mother's voice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So anybody else? What happens when you get triggered?
So this is Shira.
Yeah.
I feel like I get almost like a little bit warm, like hot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like my like as if like my insides are getting I'm like boiling a little bit like with upsetness. Like I'll give you an example. I feel like I get triggered when let's say I put my I have like two little girls and two boys who are a little bit older. So it's like I'll finish putting my girls to bed and then I'll go downstairs and I'll see like the like let's say my next boy who should have been getting ready for bed who also has ADD. And he's, like, not yet started or way behind schedule. And, like, my husband was around but not aware of what time it was. Then I'm like, that's an automatic trigger for me. And I feel like I'm getting, like, I feel like I'm my body's getting warmer. And I kind of lose control of that, like, the logical, you know, calm way of, you know, taking care of the situation. I get very, like, business-like. Like, okay, now this has to be done right now and this has to be done next and, you know, it's this and this time, and if you want me to tuck you in, you know, we have X amount of time, which is probably not a good way to talk to a kid with ADD, or to any kid, but, like, to a kid who it's not really in his control so much of why he's running late.
Right. So, but what's happening for you is you get warm and boiling, so that's sort of when it gets triggered, but there's this physical reaction that you're noticing. Right?
I feel like the warmth is the physical, like my body, like I feel like I
yep.
get warm, like inside.
Yeah. So, and it's in, and so both of you, I'm noticing so far, when you get triggered, you go to anger. Anybody else have a similar or a different experience? I can never tell if Tracy's on mute.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. What shows up for you?
When I get triggered, I can feel my body tense a little bit and my breath changes, like it becomes shorter instead of deep, you know, instead of kind of peaceful, it becomes, my breath changes. I kind of hold my breath or, you know, clench my
mm-hmm.
breath.
Okay. And do you tend to get angry or sad or upset?
Irritated is the word I would get.
Okay.
We're fearful.
We're fearful? Is that what you said?
Yeah, sometimes fearful, like, is this how it's going to be forever? Or are we going to grow up and still be doing this? Or, you know what I mean, fearful, just fearful.
Yeah. Right, well, that makes perfect sense. And what about you, Rhonda?
You know, I think I just go straight to yelling.
Okay.
I don't think they're really intermediate steps. fortunately, I get triggered less and less frequently all of the time.
That's great.
Time goes by.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, I also, you know, do my best friend is sarcasm, and I do a lot of sarcasm and talk sarcastically and roll my eyes a lot. Kind of like a teenager. Yeah. That's
Yeah. So
but I don't
when
know.
When that comes out of your teenagers' mouths, you know where it comes from.
Yeah, well, I know they've been well trained.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but I, you know, I can almost deal with that because I also, you know, I also see some humor in that. So, yeah, but I guess as time goes by, I get triggered just less and less frequently all of the time. So we had a little incident over vacation that it was probably the you know the ugliest trigger I've ever had to deal with. It was so bad, and I guess what I do is I get really calm and when things are very bad I get very calm, and I start speaking in a very like professorial voice, instructing voice, and certainly a very sanctimonious voice. But like everyone else, I get hot as well, physically hot, and I will definitely blush.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, you can feel it in your body.
Oh yeah, and other people can see it as well because I get red really fast.
So here's what's really interesting. I'm noticing that all four of you, and so for me, when I get triggered, I don't know that I don't. It takes a lot for me to get angry. I'm more likely to go to hurt than anger. which is actually a lower level of energy. You know, if you've ever done any of the energy work with Diane, level one is sort of victim or apathy or sort of giving up, and level two is anger and conflict, and those are the two what are called catabolic levels of energy, and we all sort of bounce back and forth between those two in a triggered state. And so it's interesting that almost all of you go to that second level of energy, which is anger. And Tracy, when you said that that sometimes you get fearful, that's more that level one energy, right? That's mm-hmm. more of that. I use the word victim, but, you know, if you think about it in terms of the stress cycle, in terms of fight or flight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most of you are stepping into, you were talking about leaning forward, getting angry, feeling it in the warmth. That's that anger response, whereas the fright or the flight is that fear running. And what happens in the body, what's happening when you get triggered, is that your body is actually, your brain is actually entering into a stress cycle. So the frontal lobe that's been taking care of everything and keeping you calm and rational and making emotional decisions and all of that disappears as soon as you get threatened, and all of a sudden the primitive brain takes over. And when the primitive brain takes over, your attention actually moves to your feet, and you're no longer thinking from that frontal lobe. It's what I call amygdala hijack, and your brain goes to fight or flight. So part of what we talk about when we're talking about escaping this stress cycle and managing the triggers is to start by recognizing when you're in the stress cycle in the first place. And so that's why I want you to be aware of what's happening physiologically in your bodies. And so what Diane and I teach a lot, and you'll see this if you've done Minimize Meltdowns, it's in there. We've done workshops and webinars on it, is the four steps to escape the stress cycle. And you guys may want to write this down because this is a keeper. The four steps start with this recognition, this awareness. So step one is to recognize that you've been triggered and you've entered the stress cycle in the first place. So whether it's the physiological responses, whether you notice you're yelling, when you realize that you're pushing someone else's buttons and it's not really helping the situation, the sooner that you can recognize and acknowledge that you're there in the first place, the sooner you can get out of it. So that's step one. Step two is to what we call reclaim your brain. And that is to do something to get yourself out of the stress cycle and get your brain functioning back into the frontal lobe and out of the primitive brain. So for some people, you know, Tracy, you're a yogi, so for you it's probably when you recognize that your breath shifts is going back into a more relaxing breath. So for many people it's taking a deep breath. But I would say for many people it's not taking a deep breath, it's probably taking 5 or 10 deep breaths. To really reset and reclaim the brain. It may be taking a walk. It may be removing yourself from a situation. One of my favorite little tidbits that I learned from Diane is that apparently drinking water can help you reset and reclaim the brain, because the primitive brain registers water as being at a waterhole where the danger is gone and you're back to safety. So sometimes not coffee or tea, doesn't matter how good that latte is, you really need the water to reset what's happening in the brain.
Being inverted does that too.
Being inverted? I could see that.
Inverted. So if anybody wants to be inverted, you know.
If anybody does yoga, then a little head push-up or
just a little forward
handstand.
Fold, you know, like a ragdoll fold.
Or just so you mean so like doing a forward bend?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So getting the blood back to your brain at all can be really helpful. So, and I see somebody, Wendy has joined us, so hi, Wendy.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So we're in the middle of talking to escape the stress cycle.
Okay.
And step one is to recognize that you're in the stress cycle in the first place,
mm-hmm.
and to recognize with. And step two is to reclaim your brain from that stress cycle. So it may be drinking water, taking a walk, doing some exercise, sometimes something as simple as wall push-ups or a forward bend, some stretching, something to just sort of reclaim it. Deep breaths. I was telling the group earlier today, one of the things about taking a breath, a lot of times we think we're taking a deep breath when we're actually not, because we're doing, right? You know, that
right.
that breath. So
mm-hmm.
when you want to reset your brain with a breath, you want a relaxing breath, and that means you want your exhale to actually be longer than your inhale.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be a very, very long breath. Just as long as the inhale is, that there's a pause between the inhale and the exhale, and that the exhale is longer. That's
okay.
the lengthening part of your breath. So inhale,
oh.
pause, and then longer exhale. Let's
okay.
just take a minute. Everybody on the call, just take two or three breaths, what as long as you want them to be. They don't have to be huge, but see what it feels like when you try to make your exhale longer than your inhale. And just see if you notice anything. Any comments, any thought, any observations?
It has more purpose.
It has more purpose. It's actually more calming.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can breathe in and out through your nose, that'll be even more centering and more calming. So that's reclaiming the brain. And then step three is what we call make up a new story. So when we're triggered, we tend to have some story that we're telling ourselves. So if we look to the example, anybody throw out an example of some time when you're triggered.
Kids not wanting to get dressed in the morning, getting ready.
Okay.
For
and so when the kids don't want to get dressed in the morning or they're not getting dressed in the morning, what's the message? When they're not getting dressed, what's the message you tend to tell yourself?
We're going to be late. They won't be ready for carpool. The morning's just getting all shifted out of whack. I guess a little bit I'll get upset at, like, my own, you know, poor pre-planning or not waking up early enough to, you know, coordinate things better.
Okay. So everything is about to spiral out of control. I should have just gotten up earlier. It's not going to work. We're about to have a fiasco. Right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Nailed it.
So when you tell yourself that story, what's likely to happen?
Probably what I'm thinking.
Exactly. Right. I love the expression. I don't know who said it. Whether you think you can or you can't, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of power in thought.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens if you make up a new story about what's happening in that dynamic when you're triggered? What could a new, and anybody can throw out here, what might a different perspective, what's a different story you could tell yourself?
It'll be okay.
Okay, it'll be okay. So we're running a little late. That's all right. What else could you tell yourself?
Can you make up like a whole, can you make the whole thing up even if it's not realistic? Would that help?
Well, I think you got to find another story that can make sense.
Uh-huh.
So you want to make up a story that works for you. So rather than I should have gotten up early, you might replace it or reframe it with I got this under control. We can do this.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and I'm not, it's not so much about affirmation of yourself, but it is about really identifying a way of looking at the scenario that works for you. So so just as simple as, it's going to be okay. So we're running a little late, but we'll work it out. Here's how we can handle it. It's going to be okay, right? When you have that perspective, what's possible from there?
if you really believe that it's going to be okay, then I think you're able to just talk calmer, and then the kids will hopefully be calmer.
Right. Well, remember, by the time you're making up the story for yourself, you've already reclaimed your brain. So you're not coming from a stress place anymore. You're out of that trigger place, and you're calm. You've taken your brain back. It's back in the frontal lobe so that you can calmly tell yourself it's going to be okay. And the idea is to tell yourself a story that has another way of looking at it. So the example, just throwing out another example, an example somebody used on a call earlier today, was when his son wouldn't pick up his toys. When he had asked his son and he hadn't picked up his toys, and he had asked him again and he hadn't, so the story he made up for himself was he is lazy, irresponsible, and disrespectful, right? So when he made up a new story that was about his son, and the story was something more like, he's had a long day, and it's hard for him to do this, that shifted his ability to be compassionate and changed his ability to approach his son. Do you hear the shift?
I love that.
Good. You heard the shift. Good. So that's step three. Step three is to make up a new story, right? But to make a story, as Diane and I like to say, if you're going to make it up, make up one that works for you. Because it's all made up anyway. It's not like we're going to be late and it's all going to fall apart and everything's crazy. It's not like that's any more true than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
That's just that fear place that you go, right? So you make up a story that works for you. And then step four is to take action based on the new story. So in your example, Shira, if the new story is, this is going to be all right, what action might be possible? What's a different action you might take?
In my situation, I really think it's more of a matter of me getting up earlier and starting the process earlier, so I leave enough gap time for a little bit of resistance, which is normal because I compassionately can think that the girls are tired and it is early and, you know, it's hard to run out of bed and get dressed, just like I don't want to do it either.
So it may be that you're accepting, okay, well, today's going to be a mess, but I'm going to start getting up earlier.
Mm-hmm. Honestly,
and
I started dressing them the night before, and they sleep in their clothes.
Yeah.
But I've
done it. I've been there.
All I do is pull the diaper off, or pull off or whatever, and pull the underwear right
down. So focus on what the action is here. So step four for you is what? If step three was, it's going to be okay, and I really do need to get up earlier in the future, that it's really not their fault, I'm going to get up earlier. What's the action you can take from that place?
Besides getting up earlier? Or
mm-hmm. In that moment,
in that
to keep
moment?
You from getting, from re-triggering.
Well, I guess I can re-shift my morning schedule in case, like, they miss. Well, my husband takes them to school with him, so if, let's say, they miss it, their ride, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's not like he could be late. He teaches there. That's the added pressure where, like, I don't really have a choice. It's not like, oh, well, I'll leave 5 minutes later. They can't.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the only other thing I could do is say, okay, fine, I'll rearrange my schedule and I'll take them to school if I need to, and that will be today, and tomorrow I will get up 10 minutes earlier.
There you go. Beautiful.
Thank you.
So there's that opportunity to reframe the story for yourself. And that's the coaching skill of sort of making up a new story is called reframing. And it works in a huge amount of ways in our world. There are often times where we're telling stories, our kids are telling stories, we're making up stuff all the time. So when you can reframe it to a way that works for you, or that help your kids learn to reframe things in a way that works for them, it opens up a huge amount of possibility.
Thank you.
So what's coming up for anybody else? What are you thinking, noticing? What are you aware of?
This is Lana. I'm a little
on step four, I'm just kind of, I'm having a hard time thinking of a few examples. I mean, I follow the example that we just went over, but I'm trying to apply it in my mind, and I'm not sure exactly, is it, because sometimes when we're in that triggered state, it's about something that has to happen right away. You know, like the father with his son who's cleaning up toys at night, there is that pressure of, oh, that just has to happen, you know, because he's going to be late to bed. I mean, it's like we can leave the toys and tomorrow do something different. Do you know what I mean? Whereas in, I forget who was speaking, but her morning situation, yeah, her situation's a lot different where she has to do all of this. She has to reclaim her brain, reframe, and come up with an action all within a very short period of time because she's pressed for time.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? So I guess I'm just having a hard time. Like, what exactly is the action we're supposed to be looking toward? Is it something in the future? Like, how to do this differently next time?
It's going to depend on what your trigger is and what you're responding to. But a great question, because I think what I'm hearing, the question is, how do you deal with it when it's time sensitive?
Mm-hmm.
Or as my husband says, when it's a now thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and it's interesting that you bring it up, because I'd say for years that was probably my husband's biggest triggers with my kids, was that when it was a now thing, and it's often the trigger that we deal with is comes from the rushing and the urgency. Right, we're constantly in this day and age rushing, and in so doing, we're very often putting our sensitive kids in a pressure cooker.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be that if that's the trigger that you see happening a lot, then the issue, the action, is what do we need to do to allow more time? Just like Shira is saying, it may be that you can't do anything that different in that immediate moment, but what can you learn from it to make it better for the future?
Mm-hmm.
I agree also that when it's a time pressure thing, it's a different situation than when you're just having like a family dinner and someone is inappropriate with their food or is not, you know, acting the way you want them to act, and like you have time to sit and think of how you want to react, as opposed to when there's something pressing you to be somewhere at a certain time or
right.
Other pressure.
Yeah, it's a different kind of trigger that happens when you're on a time crunch. And then you have to ask yourself, does everything have to get done, and what can you let go of in that immediate moment? But then the action, I think, for that is more of a planful one. But you raise a really interesting question, Lana, and it's important because the four steps are about staying out of that triggered place. Right. So if it's you recognize you're triggered, you reclaim the brain. So ideally, as I said, you're calm now. If you are making up a new story and it's not working, you may need to make up another one. Right. You may need to come up with something else. Like somebody was saying earlier today, she was saying the example she was using was getting triggered by her daughter. And as she was responding to it, the story she made up, she made a sarcastic comment in with it. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was like, she said, so I guess she's really tired from her frickin' day or something like that, right? And so what I realized was that she made up a story, but she didn't. It wasn't helping her, because it was still the story was putting her back into that triggered space.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to come up with another one, right? She had to keep looking till she found the compassion for her daughter's experience, and not just being stuck in her own. And that's what happens when we're triggered, is we're in a me space.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to. Totally in a me space, right? So we want to be able to pull away and remember that there's a being of human being involved here, and what's happening with them, Rance. You know, another place to look when you're trying to get out of this stress cycle is to get curious. So when you're stressed and you're telling yourself it's never going to work, or I don't know what to do, or this kid is obnoxious, if you get curious about, well, what's happening for her? what's going on for him, that can give you a different story and a different way to design the message in your head about what's going on. And generally speaking, though, what happens when you shift your perspective is it changes the possibilities for outcome. And that's the goal here, is to find a different perspective or way of looking at a scenario so that something else is possible for you. Because when you think, as Cher was saying, when you think there's no way this is going to work, this is a fiasco, it's a fait accompli, right? But if you believe that it's possible, that it's going to be okay, you can find the path to make it okay. What do you think, Lana? Does that hit it, address it, or do you have to chew on it more?
I think both.
Okay, good.
That was helpful, and definitely, yeah, this is an unfolding process.
Yeah. Yeah, this one in particular. But what I will tell you about this particular tool is that you can teach this to kids. And in Minimize Meltdowns, we actually give you language and talk about how to teach it to kids. Particularly, you know, as they hit about 12, 13, but even with little kids, you can help them begin to recognize when they are getting stressed or anxious or scared or fearful or, you know, any of those emotions. Help them begin to recognize it and identify it, and then teach them how to calm down. I probably spent 1 or 2 years with my son with conversation after conversation. Anytime something came up about school, we'd end up sitting on the kitchen floor, and I'd sit with him and let him breathe and say, I'll wait. And he did not want to breathe and calm down, and I would just calmly wait until he learned to calm himself down, because I wouldn't have the conversation with him while he was triggered, which, of course, triggered him further at first, made him crazy, right? But he can now calm himself down, and he learned how to do that by my just going through this. You know, when he was younger, I wasn't saying to him, this is step one, this is step two, right? But with my 14-year-old, when I taught it to her, I was saying to her, this is step one and this is step two.
Such a great skill to teach kids.
Yeah, really, it's very, very powerful. So everybody take a minute and look at the wrap-up sheet. What do you feel like you got from today? What's your takeaway from today? What did you focus on, or what's your clarity from today? And then the second question is, how can you apply this to your life right now? And the third is, what action do you want to commit to take? And then, what do you need to do to set yourself up for success? And who'd like to share either what your aha, your clarity is from today, or what commitment you want to make?
I'll go, because I haven't been out here for a while. Sorry. I learned that to try to keep thinking positive, which I'm usually pretty good at, but maybe I should take some more time to do some breathing, because I am one of those that does the rush one like you did. I have a thing, a hat, that I, it was along the lines of change your thoughts and you change your world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I look at it every day. I have it in a place where I see it every day. So when I do get frustrated, I have to walk by it. It's in a place I walk by every day.
That's
so
great.
So I have little things like that around the house too. Try to keep to remind me of things like that, but it still gets frustrating. So.
Yep. So that step two for you is going to be really important, making sure you take yourself out of the stress cycle before you before you move forward with changing your thoughts and taking action.
I wanted to breathe more, too, because I haven't been on here for a while because I've been doing a lot of special ed things for a thing. And I had my son reevaluated, and the doctors say one thing, and the school says another. And, you know, I moved recently, so the school is doing much better with him. But they still don't agree with the doctors, and so I find myself not wanting to talk with them as much, you know, not that they're being mean or going, they're doing wonderful there, but I find myself back in that situation where I find it harder to stay calm.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of, it's just frustrating right now, so I'm trying to, like,
well, definitely want to encourage you to go back and listen to the first part of the call about triggers, and I think mm-hmm. this is using the breathing, using the mechanisms to pull yourself out of that stress, that stress cycle, that amygdala hijack, as we call it,
right,
can really keep you calm. So thanks.
You're welcome.
Who else? What other commitments or clarity from tonight?
Okay. I'll say something. This
ahead.
Is Lana.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say that I think for me, the reframing is really an area I could use more daily practice in, because I tend to quickly judge and maybe put words in someone's mouth, or, you know, I try to figure out people's behavior without really stopping to ask questions.
Mm.
And, you know, so I can be very quick about that. So, especially if I'm triggered, you know, if I'm really calm and relaxed, I'm more flexible. But in that moment, I need to really think about where my child is coming from and not just make these quick assumptions out of anger.
Yeah. Yeah. So really getting that child's eye view.
Yeah, and really start to really think about his experience and not mine
mm-hmm.
for the moment, you know, to get both sides in there. And I can definitely slow myself down. I can definitely do some of those physical things. They're not foreign to me. They're things I do grasp on. And I do see, like, I've been in situations where we're rushing in the morning, he's late for school, and I think, okay, and I even said to him this morning, this isn't going to happen tomorrow. We're going to be on time tomorrow. So, you know, and that means he has to get up. But it's the reframing. That's a huge one for me right now.
Great. Okay. Anybody else?
I agree with what, was it Lana was saying?
Yeah.
It was a good reminder for me just to remember that when I feel triggered, I am in a me space. And, you know, in front of, like, with her children, it's probably not the best space to be at a time when other things have to get done. I love the whole concept of, like, getting curious and, you know, kind of that gets you out of the me space and trying to design a new message.
I love it.
Yesterday.
One of the very first coaching tips I ever wrote after I started coaching was get curious. It was on mm-hmm. curiosity. It's really, really powerful.
I love it.
Yep. Anybody else? Okay. So I have a little extra homework assignment for you for the week. I want to encourage you to pull out a list or a notebook or a piece of paper or something, and I want you to write down every time you notice yourself getting triggered. And really, not every little one, but notice the things that trigger you. And I challenged the group earlier today to write down, to come up with 20 things that trigger you. Because I think as you begin to see the patterns and notice where you tend to get triggered, you are going to be able to begin to shift it. And when we start coaching with people, we often give them a document called What Am I Tolerating? And it's a similar thing. When we recognize the things that we're tolerating in our lives and we verbalize them, when we bring it out and express it, we stop being as willing to tolerate them. And even as simple as, you know, that light bulb's been out for 3 weeks or that door is still squeaking and I've been meaning to oil it or whatever it is. Once you verbalize it, it's harder to stay with it, right? You're more likely to take action. So similarly, when you begin to identify your triggers, you're going to be more likely to recognize them, to acknowledge them, and to begin to shift how you respond to them. So I encourage you to use the forum and share with each other what you're noticing, but my challenge to you is to try to recognize and identify as many of the triggers as you can. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So anything for anybody else today? Any other comments or thoughts you want to share? We're a little over time, I know, so I want to be respectful of time. Okay. So have a fabulous couple of weeks, everybody. Remember to connect with each other on the Facebook forum. And I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Okay. Thank you
so much. Thank you.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Okay.